Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. Before we start today's episode, I just want to say, first of all, you might have noticed that this episode is coming out a couple of days early. That's because you guys have been so patient that I decided your wait should end. But of course, if you are someone who's like, hey, I would love to get all the episodes earlier, go to patreon.com/frogcast and, sign up. And then you'll get every episode a week early. But the more important reason why I decided to start the show with an announcement is this. This Wednesday, May 31st at 8 p.m., I will be at the San Francisco Punchline opening for my dear, dear friend of the pod, Jessica Seely. She is doing her album recording, and I want everyone to go. It is going to be a really fun show, and Jessica is not just one of the funniest people I know, but one of the funniest stand-up comics I've ever seen. And I mean that sincerely. She is so freaking funny, and her album is going to be dope, and you're going to want to be there. If you are in the San Francisco Bay Area or anywhere nearby, come to the San Francisco Punchline, 8 o'clock, May 31st. That is this Wednesday at 8 p.m. I already said that. You can get your tickets at punchlinecomedyclub.com or Google SF Punchline or San Francisco Punchline. You will find it. Jessica Seely. There's a promo code. If you enter it in the next couple of days, you will get half off. Promo code BULLS. BULLS. All right, everyone. Enjoy Pod Yourself the Wire Season 3. Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself
the Wire. I don't know why you're trying to make it hard for me.
I wasn't. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire and talk about it. Thank you so much once again for tuning in to the world's only The Wire podcast. Some of you may have noticed something different. I guess anyone who's listening to this on a podcast app hasn't noticed anything.
No.
Blissfully
ignorant they are.
Yeah. And God bless them because, sometimes it's better to live in ignorance than it is to live with intelligence. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the more I know, the more I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Never told us that on NBC.
That's right. For the, 500 of you or so who are subscribers to our nascent YouTube channel, you've noticed that there is a video of this podcast. That's right. On YouTube, we are now putting up some videos of the podcast. So not only
look, are you, Mom, I'm streaming.
Yeah.
Oh,
it hurt.
They've been able to see me the whole time.
I've
been trying to be a good boy and wait.
Yeah,
like I know.
I'm kind of blinking.
He's in David's quiet corner, but they can see you. You're not fooling anybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, anyone who's just listening had no idea you were there. But anyone who's watching is going, look at David just not saying anything.
Wow, I wonder what bobbleheads he has on the top of that bookshelf behind him. I bet he'll bring them up later.
I hope he does, because I would like to know. But we're putting out some video podcast. Listen, this is an experiment. I wanted to see how easy it would be to make a transition and also have a video, because I know some people, namely young people, like to watch podcasts.
Ew.
Did you say ew to?
Yeah, I don't want to attract the young.
Okay, that's what it is.
I feel like I've had
it. You're disgusted by young people.
That's right. Yeah.
Not me.
I don't like them.
I love the younger, the better.
Collagen?
Yeah.
Gross.
No,
you were saying that before we started recording, you were really getting on to that.
No, I didn't.
It's like point of emphasis, seems like.
He's a liar. But yes.
Children should be watching.
YouTube.com, I think, /broadcast. I don't know. We'll put a link to our YouTube channel so that you can check it out. Who knows? Chances are you'll watch it and you'll go like, oh, no, why would I do this? But who knows? Maybe you'll like it. I don't fucking know. Okay. Today, we're going to be talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 1, Time After Time. And our guest today, you already see him if you're watching, and you just heard him earlier if you're listening. It is, of course, David Roth.
Hi, how are you? How's it
good.
Going?
It's going good. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing good.
Didn't you used to have applause sound effects or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Check this.
There we go. Thank you. Jesus. Wow. Give an intro.
Bro, there's so many things. I like, you know, it's like as soon as you add video components to things, I forget that I could, you know.
Wow. Do you have like a toilet flush sound effect?
Oh, fuck. Fuck.
No, what?
I don't know. I think that was laughter, but it was way too loud.
Yeah.
There's probably I could add a toilet.
Listen, David's here. That's the important thing.
That's
we
right.
got the wire to talk about. Let's
sound
do it.
To do a podcast or video thing at all.
Well, yeah. And do you guys hear my baby, by the way?
No,
not so much.
It's sick.
Is she in the room with you now?
No, she's downstairs. She's crying like a motherfucker. She's teething right now. And so she's just crying at everything. It's pretty great. But so tell me, David, first of all, fans of this podcast will notice that David is usually our season closer. We bring him in, you know, to just like end the season. Right. But I kind of started realizing that when it comes to like The Wire season finales, they're not the most climactic always. So I decided, you know, David, we should have you for the beginnings, the first. The thing that rocks it, you know, at the beginning.
That rocks the cradle.
Absolutely. That's you.
Rebecca De Mornay of the podcast scene. They get that
That's
a lot.
Right.
And this is, I think it's cool that you're experimenting with a Tampa Bay Rays style opener approach. You have me in. I throw just absolutely replacement level junk for the first three batters, and then you take me out, flip the whole lineup.
Yeah.
Blue Jays have no idea what to do with it.
That's for sure a baseball reference.
No.
I'm nodding knowingly.
I understand fans. Who the Tampa Bay Rays are. I've seen them play against the Dodgers, I believe.
Yeah, the Dodgers. That's right, in the World Series. But I am glad to be here for an episode where there's more things that I can understand. I enjoyed the previous ones because I enjoy watching television shows and talking about them with my friends Matt and Vince.
Aww.
But there was, yeah, that's right. It could be a very sweet episode. I'm going to be really nice the whole time.
Yeah.
But also, like all those previous ones, it's just like a bunch of storylines that I faintly remember from 20 years ago arriving at very unsatisfying resolutions.
Right. Yeah. It's like the
this
whole point
way
of
more
the show
fun to watch one of these.
Right. The whole point of the show is that justice, you know, doesn't work. All of our institutions are broken and the bad guys win. And a lot of the times the bad guys include not just the criminals, but specifically the cops. So it's not satisfying. And
no, quite the contrary.
I want you here to satisfy.
We demand satisfaction.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to satisfy these two dudes.
Hell yeah.
That's what it's about.
We're here to satisfy dudes. And I'm so glad that you're here to do that for us. Let's get this started. We, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. All right, let's see if I can do this. You go video file, and then here. Well, did I put?
I just realized the YouTube thing means we're gonna be hearing the full versions of all songs now instead of the truncated version that we usually listen
to.
It'll
still be truncated.
All right.
Well, I mean, you know, we'll see. I don't have the courage to play a full version of my songs, but here we go. Pod. Podcast. Pod. Podcast. The Irish. Pod. Season 3. Hell yeah.
Nice.
I will say
that the impassively saying pod thing is a gag that has worked for me every single time I've been on here. So if you're concerned about whether or not the man in the little window is laughing when you're like podcast, I can deliver on that front.
Yeah, no, he actually is. This is the other reason we decided to have you on for the first episode where we tried to do it with video, because I know that you're a good sport. Okay. Today, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, once again, we're talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 1, Time After Time. Vince, when did this episode come out?
Matt, this episode came out September 19th, 2004.
And what's the synopsis that I didn't put down? From top of your head, make up a synopsis for season three, episode one of The Wire.
The towers are going down. The wire is going up. And the detail is going sideways because the guy that they thought was going to promote is not getting promoted. But guess what? Cuddy's there. You remember him. He's a boxer. The Wire.
That was actually really good. Yeah. That was really good.
I thought
good.
You guys were doing a bit and had it scripted for like 70% of when Vince was talking.
Yeah. No,
you just find a motif and you stick with it until it kills you.
You get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vince, Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
I think what you're trying to say, Matt, is that we're about to evaluate some art, and you cannot evaluate art divorced from its cultural context.
That's right.
We got to put some of that context back in. We're going to do that with a little something we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day
machine tells the tale, son.
Yeah, look at that. I made videos for all these.
I know. I'm seeing them.
Took a lot of time.
We're going all the way back to September 19th, 2004. I was probably wearing some cool ass cargo pants and maybe
in
wearing
2004,
some puka.
2004?
No, that was probably a little late.
I was like, no way.
You know, I was uncool, but not that uncool. We're 2 months from a presidential election. And things sound like they're going great for our man, Jonathan Kerry, from the New York Times. Kerry pulls ads from some states as spending is limited. Senator John Kerry, who was advertising in 20 states earlier this summer, had hoped by now to be playing on a broader canvas that included more states that President Bush won in 2000. But advertising data gathered for the New York Times by Nielsen Monitor shows that from September 7th through last Thursday, Mr. Kerry was running advertisements in just 13 states. He had pulled back in 7 that he had tried to make competitive, including the crucial battleground of Missouri. Yeah, we still hear all about that crucial battleground of Missouri. Yeah, always the Keystone State.
Yeah, the Keystone State, famously. First state.
As goes Missouri. So goes, I don't know, whatever the Klan's doing.
That's the one that's got Waukesha County in it, right?
Yeah. Probably.
The President Bush is still enjoying a bounce from his convention, apparently. So
he had a convention bounce? I don't even remember that convention.
Yeah. I remember at the time being like, Kerry's, he's got to win this, right? Like, come on.
Yeah, how can he lose?
How could he lose? We got this...
I mean, sure, he's unlikable and weird looking, and there's just something about him that screams like there's dead bodies buried somewhere.
Yeah, I mean,
on
he
an
looks
estate.
Like a weird old, New England Dracula.
Yeah. Like the thing that the Patriots used to have on their helmet, like after they replaced the crouching man.
They just have some lurchy goon with too much forehead windsurfing. That should be the.
He does have a weirdly two-dimensional face. Yeah. Like it's flat. I know that it's like there's an oblong thing going on.
There's a whole head there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's got a shape a la the Moon Man who is selling the big and spicy.
Yeah,
McChicken.
Like I was gonna say the Shock Top logo, but like much more conservative in its general presentation. But
but it was like the Moon Man was just like
He just wants to feed you a Vine Stefan.
I have a private plane.
Hefeweizen, sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, so John Kerry's doing great.
Gonna win.
Yeah, gonna win. Probably gonna win. That's what we were all thinking.
Definitely gonna win.
I mean, what I wouldn't do for John Kerry right now, though, let's be honest. I'd take him.
You mean because he's alive?
Yeah, because he's alive and he's not Kamala Harris. Like, those are my two
He's pretty
baseline.
Relative to... Kamala's been doing some... There was some funny posts today about just basically taking some of the lines from Dune and putting them in Kamala Harris's... signature diction. It's like we like it is time to put our hand in the box, which it has always been in, and what is in there, of course. It's like, no, it's very. She's not a good
fear
politician.
Fear is if it kills minds, the mind can be killed. If not today, then another like, day.
Or moment in time when that is transpiring, and that is the thing to hold in our minds in this moment.
You know,
she's great.
Yeah, the thing is, she's bad in a way where it's just like it's out of fear that she really might be the president because Joe is going to accidentally, you know. Put the wrong like thing in his mouth. He's gonna eat the silica gel or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It says very clearly, do not eat. But that's executive prerogative. Yeah. Once you get to the office,
don't tell me what to do, Jack. Right.
Yeah,
but like, I don't actually know how terrible she would be as president. I just fear for it because
I'm guessing bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, of course, based on her being, you know, her. Being the senator of California, it's not like she was epic, but...
all right. But you know what? This is not a Kamala Harris podcast.
Should be.
This is our first Kamala Harris podcast online. Yeah.
We're living in 2004 right now.
Absolutely.
We don't even know who that is yet. We're busy talking about how there's a new iMac in town.
Yep.
Oh.
If Apple's new iMac G5, which premieres this weekend, looks familiar, there's a good reason. It resembles an iPod, supersized. By evoking the iPod's slimmed-down innovative design, Apple is betting the iMac G5 picks up some of the buzz and the tremendous sales that the portable music player has enjoyed.
Yeah, because that was that's why we all loved the iPod. We were just like, yeah, we like it because design good, not because small.
Yeah, I didn't.
Not because small fit in pocket.
I just conspicuously took it out and put it on the bar, and then looked around meaningfully at the people around me.
Yeah.
Plugged a full sized keyboard into it, just yep. Like this is also a computer. That's what this is. Yeah. Whatever happened to the iMac G5? Is that still around?
I still have one in my garage.
Yeah.
I think it was this model. Yeah. Still haven't gotten rid of that. One of these days, I'm going to get that recycled, but I haven't done it yet.
Right. But then you have to go to the technology recycling plant, and it's like I got a bag of batteries. So it's like you got to go special trash, and it's like I don't want to go special trash.
Yeah. Other news. The aging MTV reality series Real World was moving to Philadelphia, and it's got a brand new castmate named Karamo, who revealed that he was a homosexual, much to the chagrin of his two hetero roommates, MJ and Landon, who had no clue. This was also the point that I learned that Karamo from Queer Eye used to be on The Real World.
I was wondering, is it that Karamo?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why he looks so familiar.
Good for him.
Yeah.
It's always nice when someone from The Real World goes on to have a career that doesn't involve being on The Challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, doing stand-up because you got slapped.
Yeah. Or, right. Or whatever Sean Duffy did, get elected to Congress and then quit to be on TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that a guy?
Like
what guy was
that
from? Stop remembering guys. Which guy was that? Explain yourself.
He was a Wisconsin farm guy. That was his whole thing. I don't remember. I'm trying to think of what season he was on. He married a woman from his season, and they're both like kind of like just like plug and play, like sort of mid-level exemption free agent types in the Fox News universe. Like you can get them on like 15 minutes notice. He'll like have a tie on or not have a tie
he
on.
He puts on a tie and he's just like... Yeah. White people fight different than black.
Right. Exactly.
I'm here. What's the subject matter?
How much euphemism are we doing here?
Yeah.
How much back into the blue do you need for me? Because I got to do my vocal exercises.
Oh man, yeah, no, I do like the last minute replacement for a Fox News host just waiting. Yeah, he's just
the victim was actually at fault. The solution is more guns, actually.
doing push-ups and being like, yeah, if you have a hoodie, you are allowed to die. If you
they like cut to him, but he's halfway through a sentence. He's just been talking for an hour, getting ready for the camera to go on.
Up your pants, and that way, when the police see you, yeah, everything's good.
Mm-hmm. Trans, yeah, people, trans. Yeah.
In other outdated tech news, and this is my last story, taking us back to 2004. This one's from the New York Post. Academy fights Oscar DVD piracy. Remember that problem?
Sort of.
Oscar screeners won't be passed among New York friends this fall if the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has its way. The Academy plans to ship 11-pound piracy-proof DVD players to its members for viewing nominated movies. Screener DVDs would only work on the machines, which also prevent dubbing. Cinia, a Reston, Virginia-based firm, has offered to send 10,000 of the $800 secure players for free in exchange for promotion of its encryption technology. Executives at Cinia's parent company, Dolby, said they want the studios to sign up to use the encryption technology for at least 3 years. But the studios, who haven't been able to test the machines, fear they'd be tough to hook up, expensive to ship, and be too big to be portable, a big problem since voters often screen while traveling. We think it's a really good idea, Warner Brothers spokesman Barbara Brogliotti told the Los Angeles Times, but there are still some kinks to be worked out. There are also other ways.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money because we have to keep making them. We had to open a factory. There's some kinks.
We were hoping for a heavier DVD player than 11 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately,
we
wanted
to be so heavy.
87-year-old Academy member getting sent an 11-pound DVD player, like a bespoke DVD player.
We're also going to send a young person in to show them how HDMI cables work and how to work the input on their remote control. Because we really, really do not want people getting a free copy of Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2, too good of movie.
Yeah. I don't
Other
remember.
Options in 2004 are Man on Fire, Secret Window, Manchurian Candidate, Secret. Tornado, Butterfly Feck.
What?
These are all movies.
Oh, Butterfly Effect.
Butterfly Effect.
I thought you said Barfly Effect.
Barfly Fuck.
That's the attempt to reboot Mickey Rourke's Barfly.
Barfly
For a younger
fuck.
Audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, sparks. Amazingly, I don't think this one actually caught on, but kudos Weird. To Cinia's publicist for getting this placed in the New York Post at the time in the guise of it being a really good idea to fight piracy.
Yeah, no, because you got to sell. You wouldn't. I mean, you wouldn't download a car.
Maybe you wouldn't.
Yeah. Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, FBI. FBI.
Seriously, you can't admit that. Sort of. I have screeners in my home from when I was in the Writers Guild, but I don't lend them out. I've certainly never given any to my parents and then had them return to me like 2 years later.
Yeah. I would never give a screener to my parents. That's not exactly what they're for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I have never received stolen goods.
That's true.
Okay.
Well, we've gotten everything on the table. It's great. There's three law-abiding guys.
Just not breaking laws and supporting our troops.
Right.
Our troops being the police.
We're back in the blue.
We're back it's good to, in the blue.
Yeah, to celebrate the men and women, our first responders.
Absolutely. Our armed forces
in
the streets.
Well, that's been the back in the day machine.
There it is. That's what's so, if this is your first time listening, you needed to know all that so you understand the cultural context of The Wire.
We need to know where we're at in place and time before we begin this episode of The Wire. Because, it's a show about contemporary events.
Exactly. It's a show about politics.
Anymore.
It's a show about elections. It's a show about, the evolving nature of technology. This episode in particular had a mini disc player, which I was like, fuck yeah.
Yep.
Those will catch on. That is the...
It's weird that they didn't. They were smaller, Can't take that away from them.
Maybe it was insufficiently elegant design.
Yeah. Mm. You know what was genius?
Yeah, it did look like kind of like a floppy disk kind of thing, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was ugly.
But it was like... I thought it was great because I totally understood the thought process. It was just like, things keep getting smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they make a mini disc, little tiny disc. And they're like, well, people lose it. Well, put big box around it. I don't know. Like, it's a great idea. I understand the thinking. Okay. So this week's Balmer B story is taken from directly from the episode title. And, you know, it's rare that The Wire has with that, it's this easy for me to come up with a synopsis parody song for The Wire. And so, yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of that for you right now. Let's see if I can do this. All right. Can you guys see it?
Yes. I was hoping there'd be a video. I'm in a vacant. Jimmy spies the Barksdale crew caught up in wires. Daniels runs his MCU. Herc and Carver are back on the grind.
Now you guys gotta watch.
Fooled by corner.
Another verse.
Apparently, Red Roberts rules of.
What?
Justin.
Oh. Just us.
Oh, okay.
Wait,
okay.
Can you not hear it?
No.
Oh,
it
sorry. Here we go. There we go. We're back.
To the channel, what will look like? String almost kills him on sight.
Would you look? We are back talking season three. Wire after wire, close the book on the docks, back to drug violence, crime after crime. Did you know David Roth taught Matt Leib to sing? Rhyme after rhyme, season three, episode one of The Wire, time after time.
All right.
Yeah, bitch.
All right.
There's still 12 seconds left in that track. I don't. Was that just
that was, that just, was just me saying, saying sucking on dick, eating on nuts, you know,
fucky sucky, very
fucky sucky, things.
And
so on
to
and
the
so
pained,
forth.
You know, the pained part, the pained octave change. Yeah. There, that was.
I think I sung it pretty. Yeah,
you did.
You did. I mean, no, it's properly pained. It was.
This
good.
Also sounds like progress in the sense that, like, if I remember correctly, the one I was on previous, mm-hmm. like, you were so in baby world that you're like, yeah, man, I'm not singing any fucking songs right now. Like, I've slept 3.5 hours the last 4 days.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I would. First of all, I'm thriving in fatherhood.
Flourishing. Glowing.
Absolutely glowing. Some of it is sweat. But
some of it is glistening and some of it is glowing.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it is vomit and poo-poo. But, listen, last time I was still doing the songs, but they were very, you know, they were a little bit more low key. But that one, I was just like, I'm going all out time after time. It's such a good song.
And yeah, this is the only, I mean, for people who don't understand the reference, the Wire episode that we're discussing today is named Time After Time, which is this the only Wire episode? It feels very uncharacteristic so of the Wire to name an episode like it's a Julia Roberts rom-com or something. Yep.
Completely. And also, no idea what that is in reference to. Did you guys get that at all?
I guess it's about like the cyclical nature of poverty and like the police keep doing the same dumb stuff and the criminals keep doing the same dumb stuff and the politicians do too. And that just keeps happening, I guess. But I mean, that's very broad. I don't know.
It's a rare instance of David Simon not underlining the point thoroughly enough. Like, it's sort of, it's a good episode and everything, but he did not necessarily deliver on the title with the usual, like, two-hand thunder dunk of emphasis that he does.
It feels a little like he was, you know, he's turning the essay in late and they're like, what's it about? And he's like, I don't know, the death of the American dream.
Structures.
Sorry.
Institutions.
You know the Cyndi Lauper song? It's about that. So I don't understand what the title's in reference to. If you have thoughts, let us know. But let's talk about this episode in general. General thoughts. What did we think of this episode, Vince?
So like my main thought about this was I got the sense that they learned from the season two the season two first episode. Like, season two introduction was just sort of this like baptism by fire, you know? It was like, hey, here's a bunch of new characters, and then maybe like 20 minutes later we're gonna throw in some of the people that you know and enjoy. And this was like the opposite, where it was like, all right, here's all the people that you know and love, here's what they're up to now. Right. Bubbles is back to his old shenanigans. Jimmy is still you know, a rebel without a cause. But then, you know, it did the same thing. It just reversed the order, in a way, you know, like it gave us the new, some new stuff and introduced some new people and some people that we haven't focused on as much. I feel like it did it in a more elegant way than, season two necessarily.
Sure.
Not that the season two intro was bad, but it was extremely jarring and probably
jarring.
Turned yeah. off a lot of viewers, and they it's probably got some studio notes about it. And it's like, I think the studio notes maybe were helpful in this case.
Yeah, I like season two very much, and but this is certainly the sort of thing where I don't even think of the important new characters that you meet in this. It's basically Bunny, Colvin, and Cuddy, and that's not, you're like 20 minutes into the episode before you see anybody that you're not familiar with,
yeah,
for the
right.
most part.
There's some Marlowe, you got Slim Charles, but they're
these are all introductions too to most of these characters. We did see Bunny, Colvin a little bit at the end of season two. But he was just kind of a guy, you know, where you were like, I feel like they're setting something up, and they are. Whereas
there's also that guy with like the super jarhead haircut, that cop.
Yeah.
Which I feel like his whole purpose is to be like, here's the cop that you don't want to be.
Right.
Oh, you're talking about in like with Herc and Carve.
Yeah, Herc and Carve.
Yeah, like the jump out crew, the guy that's got he looks like somebody, like he looks like maybe five or six guys in Sicario. If I remember Sicario correctly, but it is a very like serious, like law enforcement hard ass.
Yeah. That dude for sure is like, those are the parts he gets as a bad cop.
This is the first time that you see Jay Landsman, the actor, right? Who's like
this. It's not the first time. Again, you see him and Bunny Colvin together a couple times at the end of season two. But this is essentially the longest he has talked in this
And what a treat
series.
That is.
And what a treat.
I mean, the voice. Accent is like the strongest. It's like just somebody driving a large syringe of Old Bay directly through your solar plexus. Really just good shit. I loved hearing him being like, don't get captured. Or like, beer on your hand. Don't throw it away. And you're like, oh, yes.
I have a clip of that.
James. Seems that Foxtrot was hovering over the station house a few days ago and caught a lovely view of about 700 or 800 discarded beer cans on the garage roof. Seriously, no off-duty drinking on the station lot. And if you do find yourself holding the beer can, don't throw it on the roof. Take it home with you.
I mean,
perfect pronunciation of Hunter.
Yep.
Hunter.
Are they Southern? Is it East? Yeah. Like, what is the accent?
It has like all of the quirks of New England, the South, and like Pittsburgh. It's very amazing.
The best hits of the 70s, 80s, and today, as they used to say.
It's a compilation
of my retail job in high school. Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's like it has a real like Philadelphia
right.
adjacent aspect to it, and yet it is like completely its own deal. Like it is impossible to situate even in the heritage of unpleasant to listen to mid-Atlantic accents.
Right. It's like I remember when everyone got super into Mayor of Easttown, and it was just like one of those shows where everyone was like, how the fuck do people talk like that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how to like do an impression of it. And then in rewatching The Wire, I was like, yeah, they're kind of doing a Mayor of Easttown, but like Appalachian style. I don't know what it is. It's very strange, but I love it because it's so distinctive that you can't really hear it without like, you know, feeling like you're, it's like if AI was like, what do voices sound like?
Yeah. What's weird about it too, it kind of is unfair to this season, a lot of good actors, a lot of good characters and stuff like that. It is like all the new guys are Brits except for Bunny and Jay Landsman, and so there's I guess Jamie Hector isn't, but there's a lot of like guys that are just struggling to sound passably American in there. Yeah. And then you bring this guy in who's just like Mr. Yeah. Ballmer. Like it's like the logo on the Natty Bow can is playing yeah. a part.
Oh, it's like it's like the American equivalent of like you've just mastered like Cockney chimney sweep,
yes.
and then you get like some scouser from frickin' Liverpool in there, and you're like, yeah. I have no idea what the hell that shit is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, that's like, I didn't know there's a new guy.
I didn't know
people could sound like that. Like,
yeah.
It's like it's jarring because you're just like I understand accents is part of like a region, you know, this area, but like it should be a big region. This feels like everyone in Baltimore got together and was like, we're going to talk stupid, but I can't do it. But they talk great and all love to everyone from Baltimore and their weird accent. David, in general, this episode, what did you think of it?
I mean, it felt. So again, as with all of these, the first time I've watched it since the first time I watched it, it's like what I remembered as the good Wire stuff. And I think,
yeah.
and again, like just to underline the point you made earlier, like very much happier to be coming in at the beginning and getting that sort of like, there's like two versions of the Wire being pedantic, both of which I'm fine with, honestly, until season five anyway,
yeah.
but are like this version of it where it is more like sort of novelistic and less about like editorializing is cool. Like just
yeah.
a lot of like fun things happen to interesting characters and you know, there's some colorful writing and acting and it just is a very entertaining 58 minutes of television to watch.
Yeah.
And this is, again, you know, entertaining is the sort of thing where, you know, once you start getting into the serious episodes, people aren't going to want to use words like that and stuff like that. It's right. still, they haven't really begun hammering away at the critique yet. So it's just a lot of like crazy capers and shithead cops being, you know, ridiculous. And
that's, yeah. Speaking you know. Of shithead cops, our favorite shitheads are back. And I'm yeah. talking, of course, about Herc and Carve. Now, to catch us up from the previous season, last season, Herc and Carve realized that their entire role as part of the Major Crimes Unit, the MCU, they were like they weren't appreciated. And so they leave the MCU and they try to make it on their own in the DC universe. DC stands for Dummy Cops. I wrote that down. And I said it out loud. So now they are in the Western District doing what they do best, cracking skulls and getting fooled by literal children. They have a really quick storyline in this episode. They kind of just serve to introduce the Western District and Bunny Colvin and all that. But I love watching the scene with them where they are planning out how they're mm-hmm. going to do this bust.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like smart plan.
Yeah. Very smart plan.
Like, I don't know. How long did they have you on the hook thinking like, ooh, Carver seems like he's learned a few
he's
things.
On it.
Like watching all these drug guys.
I immediately was just like, oh good. This is a good plan. And because, you know, I think it actually was a good plan. The problem is that they are so like it's a reflex to be as stupid as they are. So their whole plan was there's going to be a runner. Let that person run away. That person doesn't have anything. Just make sure you just jack up the people we're jacking up. It's almost they knew that that kid was a distraction. And then,
well, I feel like it was more like they couldn't help dunking on that kid to yeah. be like, it's like the point of a decoy is that you have to kind of sell it.
Right.
Like if, when that guy ran away there, they should have been like, oh no, get him. But instead yeah. Carve did the thing where he's like, you know, step lightly. Like he's doing yeah. some sort of military yeah. pun thing there.
Right. But then,
which is basically like broadcasting, we're not going to chase you. And like, going to do.
And then they chase him anyways because he as soon as he picks up a bag they're like, what if it's reverse decoy? And then they run after him and it's like, no, you had the plan. If you stuck to it, it would have been fine. I have a clip of that.
When we jump out on these little cocksuckers, there'll be a designated runner who's gonna sky up just so we get to chase his ass. But fuck him, we let him go and jack every other motherfucker who stays. Let's mount up.
Great. It was a great plan.
Later, son. Step light.
Yep, step light. That's what I was saying.
Yo, is that the stash? Fuck.
I did an edit.
It's a good edit, Matt.
Thank you. I did it on iMovie, guys.
Good.
Okay, so before
so then he gets here, and I feel like this was heavily influenced by Training Day. I feel like this is he saw Denzel yelling King Kong ain't got nothing on me in Training Day, and he did the classic dumb guy thing, which is he saw that movie and he was like, wow, this is a movie about cool
about
guys.
A cool guy. It's about a cop who gets results no matter what the suits tell him to do.
Yeah,
I did. Somehow, just leaves with 15 minutes left, and it's like awesome. One of the best films.
Yeah,
I've seen.
Awesome. Probably worked out for him. Well, yeah, no, he's better than King Kong. You could tell because he said it. No, but this scene is this part is fantastic because he does another classic stupid guy thing in which you start off your grand statement with "I'm going to tell you one thing." And then you proceed to tell many things.
Yep.
And I have a clip of this.
Hey, listen to me, you little fucking piece of shit. I'm going to tell you one thing and one thing only about the Western boys you are playing with. We do not lose. And we do not forget.
And
we do not give up.
All those things.
If you make us go into the weeds for you, or if you make us come back out here tomorrow night, catch you on a corner, I swear to fucking Christ, we will beat you longer and harder than you beat your own dick.
I mean,
actually, now that you pointed it out, like there's like a little bit of a conscious Denzel-y cadence there that is not usually a part of 100%. Seth Gilliam's line reading. Like the way he said 100%. Corner is definitely like him being like, my man, like just like stopping just short of like putting on the sunglasses.
And the whole thing. No, he's definitely.
Which I feel like is good acting because it would make sense that he would want that. It's in character for Carver to.
I really liked Gilliam's performance. In general in the show, he's really good in this. And I think also, like, as Matt was sort of saying, sort of as a gag, but sort of correctly, like he like is competent presenting in a way that like the other guys in the squad are not.
Right.
Like you like hear him talking, you're like, this guy might know what he's talking about. Whereas like Herc, you're just kind of like, this guy is like last in his fantasy football league every year. Like he's just not a high functioning individual.
Yes.
I mean they're like a classic Dumb and Dumber duo on one level, which is, you know, like two stupid guys being stupid together. Mm-hmm. But like there is a distinction where Carver is capable of learning lessons, which we've seen like from the first season on, whereas Herc is not,
just a lummox.
Yeah. So like Carver gives you that sense that like, oh, maybe he does know how these guys are going to handle this bust and he knows what he's doing, but then you quickly learn like, nah.
Well, as soon as Herc says, hey, is that the stash? That's like everyone forgets the whole, like, you said what the plan was. You know that the plan is they're going to have a decoy, and they're just like, no, it's reverse, and they run after it. And it's like,
just on
like,
principle, they cannot let someone run away from them without
right.
It's like exactly. A cat with a fucking laser pointer. Like they're just sort of
just a laser pointer right into the sea, and you're just like, I have to. So it's kind of wonderful, and you're watching Herc and Carve, basically jack up these like corner boys throughout the whole episode, and the whole point of it is to watch Bunny Colvin look at them in disgust and be like, god damn it, you know, this police department is on some bullshit.
I mean, I feel like they hired him solely because he's really good at doing the I'm too old for this look, and he uses that very effectively throughout this season.
Yeah, no, Robert Wisdom, I believe that's the actor's name who plays Bunny, is fantastic. Like I think he is a great actor, and as this character, he just fucking kills it because he reminds me a lot of Freeman's character in that, like, you. Like if he was mad at me or maybe like I could feel shame.
Yeah.
Just
like
through
if
the
you
television.
Disappointed them, you'd be like, oh man,
I'd be like, I'd be sad for a week. And so it's
it's interesting because I was thinking about this season in comparison to last season. Last season, the catalyst of the entire season was two Polish people who were in a pissing contest over a stained glass window in a church. And it was basically about, like, you know, the pettiness of these individuals and their the using their power structures in order to try to fuck with each other. And in this season has to do with the mayor trying to get a city councilman to stop giving him shit about crime and picking a completely arbitrary percentage of murders that need to go down.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the same thing that The Wire is always about, which is, you know, a boss giving his underlings a completely unworkable solution on the ground, which Stringer is very clearly doing the exact same thing in this episode, proving that he's learned nothing from the last episode. But I also feel like on a broader level, like mostly the first season asked, like, what if we could fight the drug war like the right way?
Right.
And then, you know, and then last season is sort of like it's sort of a digression into the urban whites or the ethnic whites and and how the drugs get in. But like through all throughout the first two seasons, like the major unanswered question is like, why are we fighting a drug war? Like, is a drug war like why? Like, is that even a good thing to like try and arrest
who wants
people for
this
drugs?
And what is it for? And why do we keep doing it?
And then so that like that's the obvious question. I think, you know, David Simon and everybody making the show was very aware that that was an obvious question. And they're like, well, okay, that's what our next season's got to be.
Right. And that
and that's
we
like
find
Bunny
out.
Cole, like he, immediately in the first episode, he's like, okay, you did all that work. Like, what did you get? Like, oh, you got a 14-year-old on a loitering charge.
Yeah,
awesome.
That
good
you
job.
Beat the shit out of because right. he ran away from you exactly as you said he was going to. And then you ran after him. Like,
Yeah. And so, yeah, this season is about like, well, why this, you know, why do we keep doing this drug war? And it's because that's how people get elected. And it's how, you know, fucking city council people become mayors and mayors become governors and governors become presidents. And it's funny the amount of like how arbitrary a lot of the crime stats are, because you realize that they can just say, hey, can we make some of these stats better? And it's like, yeah, we'll reclassify some things here and there. But the big mistake was you can't really reclassify murder. And that's going to lead to Bunny Colvin trying a experiment out called Hamsterdam, which we will get to in later episodes.
Another nice moment there in that scene where, because Colvin basically pushes back against Rawls in the CompStat meeting where they're making that point. And it's, again, one of those things where, like, maybe I've just, like, read too many David Simon tweets since the last time I watched, like, a good David Simon show. Like, yeah. I was, again, pleased with the line that Colvin says is, how do you, you know, obviously you can upcharge this or downcharge that, whatever, but, like, how do you make a body disappear? And it's that, like, that, I think, was the critique this season and then especially the next season of basically, like, what all that cynicism adds up to downhill, like how it devalues the meaning of the lives of the people that are on the, you know, either on the hammering end in the case of the cops or on the nail end in the case of basically every other character in the show. And like, that's like a really good point. It is a point that I think no TV show has done as well or like meant as much as The Wire. Yeah. And it's just because I watched this guy call people like, you know, chuckle fucks on Twitter for 5 years, I like forgot that he was really actually good at making this point, which is, I think, like a totally essential point.
Yes. Yeah. And now that there's a writer strike, David, come on.
Yeah.
We love
what
you.
What do you got going on? Come like, on.
Yeah. Hosting,
doing memes. Come on.
Yeah. But he does tweet funny and you know, he loves his long strings of swears and God bless him for that. But yes, the entire like, oh, I'm sorry. Is that Brent Flyberg, the producer of the show?
Yeah, it's me. I'm here. I want to chime in and say some negative things about David Simon, if you guys don't mind.
Okay, sure, please. No, go on.
Nah, I actually, I don't, I'm not on, hey, guess what? I'm not on Twitter anymore. That's a good way to get back to feeling good about David Simon.
Blue sky.
Yeah, baby. I'm a hero. And speaking of, I am interrupting so that we can do some ads so that Matt can afford this child that he already had.
Absolutely. Oh. Thank you, Brent. We're going to do a quick break to do some advertisements that I don't know how we're going to put them in the video, but we'll figure out a way, dude. It'll be great. You know what I'll do? I'll put those YouTube ads. Well, anyways, stick around. We'll be right back.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Now that David's back, I did want to read my favorite tweet on the subject of you guys leaving Twitter from Bobo_Circus. Sorry, guys, I'm leaving Twitter. I'm going to post gleeps on frunkly.bunk with 200 of the most 38-year-old people this website ever turned out.
Oh, that's about me.
Yep. I know. This was like that got shared widely in a number of DMs where everybody was like, I don't appreciate the most 38-year-old part of that. Like, yeah. The jokes are good, but some of it's a little too harsh on some.
That's just about
control
me.
How old we are. Yeah,
I'm on the wrong side of that now.
Turn 38.
Pod.
And we're back. All right. So, just to round out the whole what's going on with the Bunny and all and the bosses and whatnot. This is also the episode where we meet Carchetti for the first time, an Irish actor, I believe. God,
this is such a beautifully sketched character. I mean, I'm sure most of it is like Martin O'Malley and just David Simon, just basically lifting Martin O'Malley's entire personality. Yeah, but I'm far enough
to do a lot of work to disguise the identities of the people he's ripping off ever. I tip my cap to him on that. But yeah.
Well, it's great because he knew that I still don't know who Martin O'Malley is that well. Like I can't picture his face. Even like at the time, I sort of knew who he was. I mean, he's sort of the proto Mayor Pete.
Right.
Just like the way he sketched this character where he's got this well of stories about cool politicians and that's what he aspires to be by being by being like the power broker, and he's gonna do some good, but even like from the beginning he is like inherently blinded to things that are real going on because it's all through the lens of like what kind of speech can you make, what kind of what kind of cool things can you say to other people that are in the power structure.
Yeah. And, he has a meeting with Burrell, in which, he's trying to get Burrell to like backdoor the mayor, like, hey, if you need anything, you come to me and then you don't need to talk to the mayor, by the way, I can't continue without pointing out that like his accent is just East Coast guy.
But it kind of fits the character because he's doing like the ethnic white shuck and jive act where he's like,
right,
he's trying to sound like extra Brooklyn, which is like,
yeah, like you're kind of like, we want looking back at the audience while turning the Pesci dial until they're like,
yeah, and it's like a trick that politicians still do and we still fall for, like, oh, look at John Fetterman, he's such a big old goon, that's great, he doesn't look like a regular politician guy.
Yeah,
there's a great clip of Joe Biden, that was posted before the 2020 election, I think, by Italian Americans for Biden, where it's just him naming Italian guys that he played high school football with. And it is it's the thing that came to mind when he was talking, because Carcetti is talking, he's like, Dominic DiPietro grabs Jimmy Carter by the ass and he says, listen, you fucking judge rule, you got to. It's all very satisfying. But it was Biden, of course, being professional grade as opposed to a character. It was just him getting up there and being like, Saverio Rollatini, he's my fullback. You know, just saying. He says like five guys' names.
Yeah. Vittorio Spaghetti Meatball.
He carried that football like he was coming home from the butcher's with a big old pile of gabagool.
Yeah. So he's telling him this story and, about like Jimmy Carter. You know, I think the story is, in my district, we tell Jimmy Carter like to fuck off sometimes.
Yeah, the story was about someone being annoying to Jimmy Carter. Yep. Not actually getting anything done. But he created the appearance of wanting to get things done, which is far more important than anything else in politics.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of perfect way to describe this character too.
Yeah. You know? Which is true of all people in power, like in business, like, you know. Like this whole recent, wave of media layoffs. It was just like a bunch of CEOs like being like, look how busy I'm doing. Look at all the stuff. I'm doing stuff.
Yeah. We noticed that the model that we created and the ideas that we had don't work. And we hear you. And we're going to lay off 10% of our lowest salaried employees to see if that does anything to fix
the thing I made them do was actually bad. So they are fired. Yeah. And I am going to continue to have new ideas that are also bad.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, again, like with Simon sort of surpassing expectation to a certain extent with this. It is that you're right that story is funny because it does not resolve in a win. It just resolves in an Italian guy badgering Jimmy Carter several times to no great effect.
Yeah.
But then there's also this sense, and Carcetti is like a really good kind of get ahead of the season or whatever. But there's a sense of like, he's extremely transactional. He's extremely ambitious. He's not sincere. There's also the chance that he might accidentally do some good in a way that the current mayor is not. Mm-hmm. And so like,
well, that's like the best you can hope for a politician.
I was going to say that's like, if you're like conditioned, if you like follow politics where you're just sort of like, I guess I got to root for that guy. Cause he might like accidentally not fuck something up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, whoever's going to do the least amount of damage, you know,
let's get this law of unintended consequences to maybe work in our favor one of these times.
Right. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, this is the character of Carcetti for me. I remember I didn't watch The Wire. I think, I maybe started watching 2007 or so. It was like right before Obama became president. And I loved it. I was like, this is a great show. And I remember while Obama was running, I was very, very excited. I was like, yeah, Obama, he's great. And then at some point, they're like, what's your favorite show? And he was like, The Wire. And I was like, that concerns me a lot. Because The Wire, especially this season with like, Carcetti and this election and, everything that's going to happen. Yeah, for me, I was like, The Wire is about how, like, this whole system is broken and how,
that's bad, right?
Right, right. Like, you understand what that means. Like, you are vying for a position, president of the United States, in a system that I think The Wire is pointed out is more than broken. And also, you kind of, like, Obama has Carcetti-ish vibes in this, like, very much. I think season four is, like, the election season, right? It's mostly the school children season, but it's Carcetti is, I think, running for office in that season. And that's the one where you see like the splitting the vote tactics and all that shit going on. And I just remember feeling kind of icky that Obama was like, it's my favorite show. And I was like, I hope it means you do changing things.
Yeah. It is weird. I mean, like, I think the one that people tend to ding Democrats, like the TV show that people get on Democrats for liking too much, is The West Wing. And that's completely like, that's a much shittier show to build your worldview around. And yet at the same time, like, yeah, you're totally right. Like the idea of being like, and that's how it really is. Like The Wire really holds up the mirror.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But like, I don't want you to continue to hold the mirror up.
Like, right, like exactly. Yeah, after a while, it's like you're going to change the reflection, right?
Yeah.
And of course, that later on, Obama becomes
about
president.
Obama, though, because he might come on the pod too, obviously.
Yes, mm-hmm. Obama, yeah. We're reaching out to you. We would like your podcast network to sign us. I'm sure he has a podcast network. This whole thing ends with Major Bunny Colvin being in an all hands meeting and being told by Rawls, who's now the deputy ops, that everyone needs to drop the murder rate somehow. So Bunny's going to have to figure out a way to stop murders from happening.
Rawls, I feel like he's got a little bit of Homer Simpson effect going on, because like he has been like the most openly like transactional and dictatorial person in the police force. I mean, other than what's his face? Al Brown.
Sure.
He's gotten extra tyrannical now. Like he's not being underhanded. Like he's just staring daggers at everyone. Like he's
liking it.
Yeah, he's gone like full Hitler at this point.
Yeah. No, he's horny for talking down to his inferiors. And he's got a reverse McNulty thing where he's just like, fuck the bosses. No. Fuck the employees.
Yep.
Which, cool. But we'll see more of that as the season goes. But we need to get to talking about Stringer Bell. This is, there's very little Stringer in this episode. But with Avon still in prison, Stringer is still running the organization. And he's running it like a business, meaning he's having lots of all-hands meetings. And he's doing Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, he's doing unnecessary meetings and giving unworkable solutions to problems. Like he's learned the business lessons a little too well. He's like, you know what? You guys really need to think about economics and implement these completely unworkable guidelines on the ground.
Go out there and buy low and sell high. I'll be here.
That's right.
To chastise you when you fail.
I'll be here to collect the profits and make sure
threaten you. Yeah, right.
Just make sure whatever you do to make it so that your job becomes obsolete very soon. I have a clip of the all hands meeting.
Your territory ain't gonna mean shit if your product is weak. Go ahead and ask them motherfuckers trying to sell them four tempos when you got niggas riding around in Japanese and German cars in America all day. Territory ain't shit. Especially when you consider it's the fight for the territory that be bringing the bodies and the bodies that bring the police.
Yeah, but how we gonna stand?
Yo, she ain't recognize your ass, man.
How we gonna stand on some...
Come on, man.
How are we going to stand on some corner that's not ours?
Well, we got the best product, right? So the chances are we're going to be able to bring in the competition by offering the re-up with us from our package. Feel me? Everybody making money sharing the real estate. Slim Chow.
But what if they don't cop our re-up, though?
Well, I'm going to worry about that when it happens. Until then, Mr. Charles, we're going to handle this shit like businessmen. Sell the shit, make the profit, and later for that gangster bullshit. Yeah.
Do the chair know we gonna look like some punk ass bitches out there?
Motherfucker, I will punk ass.
Frank.
What?
Who did have the floor,
shut
man?
Shut the fuck up, man. This nigga too ignorant to have the fucking floor.
It is.
I like that. I like that. Poot is on the Stephen A. Smith hairline plan, which is like you start losing a little, and then you just get it lined up further and further back.
That's right.
I was watching Stephen A. Smith. It was
always like this.
Yes.
Right. If you look at him sideways, his hairline is like behind his ear. He's still lining it up.
To
like
the
it's all there.
Micrometer precise. Like it's. Yeah. I guess the idea there is that you're like, he wouldn't. Like that's on purpose. So like he wants it to look like that. Like
it's
he
a
wants
style. No
like,
one would do this. No one would do this.
Just a perfect yarmulke of hair on the top of your head. eventually with straight lines.
Him and Roger Stone, they need to start hanging out. They both got that like pinhead thing going on.
Weird hairlines.
I talked about this the last episode I did too, but what a fucking delight it is to watch Bodhi do stuff.
Yes.
Just one of my favorite TV performances. Him pouting when he's forced to raise his hand and stand up. Simply can't beat it. Just great acting.
And he's not wrong. Like the look of, oh, this is all bullshit is right. This is all bullshit. Like at the end of the day, it reminds me of any all hands meeting that I have ever had working in an office in which, like, listen, I get that we're all here to give the illusion that we are all working together as equals, but you are dictating the terms. Everything you are doing is dictate. You're telling us what we're going to do, and we don't actually have the freedom to be like, hey, this is stupid, let's not do this, because you will call us ignorant and
Only that, like, you're giving vague advice that is like he never answers the question of like, hey, what happens if they don't give up the territory, or what happens if they don't re-up with us?
And he's like, well, we'll see.
I don't know.
I hadn't thought about that, actually. But
that's a good question. No, I like that he's just like, all right, you know, you think a gun's scary. You should see what the invisible hand of the free market is.
Yeah.
Got in his hand.
Slotting in as a rentier class. I guess you could learn that in an economics class where they're just sort of like, you need to create an extra layer to skim profits off of this product and let other people do the labor. I guess it makes sense in principle. It's just also, it doesn't seem like he's really sketched it all out.
And also it makes sense from, I think, the standpoint of any kind of like legitimate business. And this is the thing that Stringer always gets wrong, is that in his like, man, why can't we just run this thing like a business? It's like, because of the violence part is a pretty crucial aspect of the business. And so that's why, like, holding territory isn't just because, oh, I have a corner store where I sell things. It's like, it's also muscle. It's showing people that you are not to be fucked with. And his whole thing is just like, I mean, essentially he wants to outsource all their jobs and say, like, I don't care who's running the corners. You know, as long as they're buying, you know, our product. And I think Poot and Bodhi are like, well, we're the ones who stand on the corners.
Yeah. Like, so are we getting promoted to middle management, or are we getting obsolete entirely?
It's also like short-sighted in the way that all of those, like all of the like libertarian business ideas.
One weird trick. It's like drop shipping or whatever.
Like Stringer's a middleman too. Like Stringer's not making the drugs, nor does he have any right to say that he owned them from the first place. Like the only reason his job exists is because there are like barriers to entry to get those drugs into the marketplace. And so he's like putting them there, but then he's like, oh man, what if we could just take these out? And it's like, well, you keep knocking those down, buddy. And pretty soon you're not going to exist. Like,
right. Yeah. But he, I think, he's very confident in the idea that at the end of the day, all of the violence and whatnot is just because it's people beefing over corners. And if we just all kind of like solidify what corners are ours, what corners are theirs, and we're all just like taken from the same pot of drugs, there will be peace. And he is wrong, because the whole industry is unregulated. Yep. It is very
regulated by like forces that aren't inherently inefficient, like, which is like you get shot and you die, then there's another dude that comes and does it instead. Like,
right.
I'm really actually thinking that I may watch more episodes of this season too, just because I remember at the time, like, the Hamsterdam thing as a gambit, we don't need to get ahead of it. You guys have a whole season to talk about.
No,
is like
ahead.
Really like pretty audacious bit of like plotting on top of everything else, because it is like, it is not a thing that was really being tried. Like, this is something they made up. Like, it was an idea that people had.
It's one of the few examples of the show like doing a what if, which it doesn't usually. Mostly it deals with,
I mean,
what
it's
is.
Very literal, you know, like, as we've established. But yeah, so that's like, you can see how, you know, that's like sort of the last little bit of this is like Robert Wisdom making the Robert Wisdom face of like, this is never going to get better. Like, everybody is just like running on rails and are robots.
Right. And we're all just trying to get our stats in line so that the bosses will be happy, and the bosses will be happy if the politicians stop getting on their asses, you know. And so for him, you know, he's going, I don't know how to make a body disappear, but I do know that people will do less murdering if we allow them the space to do their commerce, which does happen. And it's great. But yeah, Stringer, just as a guy who I'm very much fallen in love with the idea of the LinkedIn Stringer Bell, who is just he's very wants to present as businessman, but without the actual without the actual business plan that works for his particular business.
Just trusting that dry fit polo to get it, like, do all the, like,
he's doing all the heavy lifting,
the hard heavy lifting that he's not doing himself, where he's like, if I just wear a Bluetooth, I think that makes me 60% more business.
Yeah. You could imagine him doing like some really good, like, MLM pump up video content.
Yep. Oh my God. Yeah.
If this were made today, you'd see him like looking at like one of those like Mr. Bean success accounts on Instagram. It's like a picture of Rowan Atkinson in a suit, and it's like, no friends, $1 million. And you're like, oh.
It's just a joker going, why need girl when instead need money? Yeah. Just like, who translated this?
This is why they need to jokerfy Stringer when they bring the series back.
Jokerfy Stringer. He's just like, stop posting hole and start posting goals.
That's good advice, though.
That, I think that is fair. Just real quick, getting into what's going on with the detail in this episode. The entire detail in this episode is kind of, I don't want to say a red herring or misdirection, but it's basically a whole setup for a quick failure. The detail has been doing some recon on fucking, you know, the, what do you call them? On the Barksdale crew, and they're really trying to get this guy, some dumbass named Drac, to be promoted. And they have all these plans. They're going to fucking, you know, they jack up his like boss, and they hope that he's going to be the next guy. Cause he's always on the wire being like, I sell drugs. I'm a criminal. Here are the list of my friends. And he doesn't get promoted. So everything kind of gets fucked. It kind of just ends with Jimmy going through the old case files and being like, well, what happened in season one and two? And then he looks, and I think we're going to see what happens with D'Angelo Barksdale.
I think like the big hole in that plan was they were like, of course they're going to promote him. He's Prop Joe's nephew. But no one ever like raises the question, how many nephews does Prop Joe have? He could like have like 20 nephews. Like, he may not have that much of a connection to any one dumbass.
There's a lot of
nephew.
Of that tie-in made too, where everybody that is in a failing institution assumes that every other institution is just as stupid and shitty in its processes as theirs. Like, Carver makes that point with, like, or I don't know if it's Carver, somebody, maybe Sidner, with Drac, where they're like, if this guy worked for the police department, he'd be like a fucking captain by now.
Yes.
This guy that's on the phone, it's like, yo, let me get some cocaine from you I'll give you money for it. Like,
which I think it's Presbo, which is like, you know.
Yeah, Presbo-Lewski says
Presbo's like, well, if I still have a job.
Right.
Surely this guy will get promoted.
Right, yeah. He's just like, I've literally blinded people. I think it's a hilarious fucking condemnation of the police department that they're just like, no, these drug organizations, like, I'm not going to promote him. He's a fucking moron.
Yeah.
And he's like,
it's actually a meritocracy at like the highest level. And then everybody else is just fucking playing house, or they're worse than that, which is know, like where the cops are.
And in terms of like the subplots of this detail, we see Jimmy, his wife has found a new guy. And Marla and Daniels are not living together, but
Jimmy,
they're pretending.
Like, how long is he going to sweat his ex-wife? Good God, man, let it go.
She's really hot, though.
We all love Callie Thorne. She's a dime. And you should have her on the podcast, and you should tell her I say hello.
I will. I will. If she ever comes on the podcast, the first thing I'm saying is go,
David Ross. Jury
Defector.
Yeah. You know,
at a certain point, you got to cut bait, like, you know, right around the time of like the divorce papers. And
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
She's
but
canoodling with another man at a Orioles White Sox game. You got to respect yourself a little bit.
You're divorced. Move on.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is with him is what does move on actually mean? You know what I mean? Because like, yeah, he's gonna fuck other girls. He'd been fucking other girls even when he was in the relationship. Like, but for him, he's just like, but that's my wife.
And yeah, it does have like that. You start to like, again, something I didn't understand when I was watching it the first time, but that like if Jimmy's defining characteristic and the thing that like periodically accidentally makes him useful in the same way that Carcetti can be, is that he like refuses to fucking take an L ever and will always go back and relitigate it until he can find some way to turn it into something else. Like,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he's hung up on the fact that she ended the relationship and not him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that he, you know, he like did so much work to change for her last season in that he was a boat captain and he, you know, he pretended to care about dead girls. Like, what else does she want from him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. God.
You know?
It's like, ugh.
I know.
I don't want to get off on a rant about how divorce is always the woman's fault, but.
Yeah, listen. I don't know if people listen to this podcast know, but friend of the pod, Steven Crowder, is going through some rough times.
He's really tough.
Real tough times. Unfortunately, apparently it's legal to just get a divorce if one person wants out of the relationship.
Yeah. Which is so messed up. And then we're going to be looking into that. Yeah.
We're going to be looking into it and Pod Yourself a Divorce, a new podcast.
Have you picked an episode for him to join you this season? Is he
gonna
be?
It's definitely going to be the one in which, you know, Jimmy gets a divorce. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Couldn't finish the bit. Talk about Steven Crowder anymore. He's a bummer.
No, I'm very much enjoying watching his downfall. It's been a real treat. And Marla and Lieutenant Daniels, they're not together, but they're pretending to be. We talked a little bit about Cuddy. I thought Cuddy was great.
I love Cuddy. This is one of my favorite storylines because I feel like he's one of the few characters in the show that just isn't fully formed. Like he's this character who has a lot of different things competing in him and he could go either way. And you know, you see him in this, you're sort of intrigued. He's kind of got the bubbles thing too, where it's like, is he going to go straight or is he going to not
Well, right, because he's very quiet. And in the scene where he's talking to Avon, or Avon's talking at him about like, hey, when you get out, you know, talk to this guy and whatnot. You're still a soldier, right? And he just like kind of stares at him. And you're like that. Yeah, he's either hard as fuck or he's like, I don't know how to tell him that I think I just want to get a regular job.
This is like so common in TV and movies where like someone will have a conversation with like the guy that you're supposed to be focused on and the person you're supposed to be focused on just like leaves without like saying goodbye or acknowledging that the other person is speaking. Like it happens all the time. Yeah. And it's like in real life, if that happened, you'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
I would be thinking about it for a week. Like if I was just like getting off the phone, like getting off the phone with somebody and they don't like give you any warning. They're just like, you called someone and they answer the phone and they're like, yeah. Yeah. Which is like a classic movie thing. Like, are you all right? I mean, like, what?
I love
bad
that.
Time.
Avon's response to it was like totally normal. It was like, I think the joint broke his ass. And it's the audience who's watching on TV going, nah, man, he's just fucking cool.
That's Cuddy, dude. You don't
That's
know Cuddy,
dude.
Though.
Cuddy doesn't need to say anything. He uses his eyes to communicate. Yep.
And another great actor and a great performance too. Chad Coleman. Love watching
dude. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
fun fact, him and the guy who plays Bunny Cole, Robert Wisdom.
Colvin.
Both Bunny Colvin, yeah. Both both ex track stars.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a fun fact.
Did he run, like, in college? Like, how far did Chad Coleman go as a track athlete?
Oh, Robert Wisdom was a star sprinter on the Columbia University track team, according to Wikipedia.
Well, well, well.
And I believe Chad Coleman says he got into acting after a leg injury ruined his track career, but doesn't say exactly what the track career, how good it was going at the time.
Yeah.
He's good. That's a good arc for that.
That's cool.
Too.
Yeah.
And a fun, that's a fun fact. Yeah, and in terms of Cuddy's, what happens in this episode with Cuddy and his arc is he gets some drugs and he is does not want to move them himself.
He gets ziggied, and you're like, well, how is he going to resolve this? Because clearly, yeah, this guy seems a lot more street smart and ruthless than Ziggy. So
yeah,
you figure this guy's going to know how to handle this better,
right? Yeah, and you know, it kind of you leave the fucking, you know, storyline with Cuddy thinking he is going to murder this guy, or yeah, he
and you're
kind of
rooting for it
because
you're like,
murdered.
Well, that guy was mean, yeah, to him. He should kill that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, in the scene where he gets, you know, basically told to get the fuck out of here, we took your drugs, fuck you. He goes into an alleyway, and the first thing you see is a guy who's like getting his dick sucked, and then there's two other guys just like standing by, and I don't think I could get my dick sucked in front of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I would be like watching it thinking it was hot either.
What are they like? What? Because to me, like watching someone, like I kind of get watching someone have sex. Like you're like, yeah, you can pretend,
yeah,
that
you
you're looking,
like,
at the boobs.
Yeah,
right. Oh, but yeah.
Watching someone get their dick sucked is just like, it's a little bit like you're watching some guy's dick. It's like also, kind of like watching a guy jack off.
Mm-hmm.
You guys ever think about that?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm old school. I feel like if you're gonna get a blowjob from someone because they want drugs, you should like do it. Like that's something you do in the privacy of your own alley. Like that's, yeah, not something
that's
you do
true
with all your
you
friends
need,
standing
like, your
around.
Buddies around.
Yeah,
they're kind of just like talking to you. They're like looking like you know, just
ordering Chinese food
on their phone. Yeah, they're sort of like, "Do you want?" I'm sorry, I know you're busy. I'm sorry.
I know, but like, just
Wizards
say,
this was went also, to overtime.
This was also that era of porn, though. Like, this was like the first like era of gonzo porn where it was right, like the guy behind the camera was like,
"Oh yeah,
you know, oh,
I love
yeah,
that
you
guy,
dude, your fucker so good, dude.
Oh, like, yeah, bro, good like, job.
You did, yeah. You, oh, you're giving it to her so good right now. Like,
yeah,
that was such a weird.
That was yeah.
Weird
it's
era.
Amazing that they spent so
move
many
your
decades,
balls
right, like making yeah, pornography before people realized that what you want to hear is like just a disgusting Cali guy being like, ugh, making so fucking Connor O'Malley sounds from behind a VHS camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember like when I first saw Bang Bus and just being like, there's a lot
first,
of shots
first
of
saw
the
drive
bus
by
driver
on the street and you're like,
sir, pick me up.
Yeah.
No, I remember like being kind of weirded out by there's just a lot of the driver. Like I knew mm-hmm, the driver's name. They're like, this is ugly. And I was like, why you? I don't care about the driver.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's getting his dick sucked.
Yeah, it's like Brechtian pornography. Like, I don't know if I needed this very yeah, much.
Breaking
very
the fourth
to
wall.
It's like, yeah, no, I want clear glass of that.
It's called breaking wall, the back wall.
Yep. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, you know, pretty good.
He's a professional. Yep.
That's right. And yeah, and Bubbles and Johnny are doing capers and they lose their pants. Very funny stuff. And
yeah,
we will
this
see
is like
what
this is like when
them.
Yeah, this was the beginning of Bubbles is a metal scam, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bubbles.
Like, oh, he's into metal now.
Yeah, he's a metal guy. He's got a guy who buys metal, and he's a guy who knows how to steal some metal. Unfortunately, he loses his pants.
It's pretty amazing that Johnny has survived this long into the show. Yeah.
I know. He is the most, like, gonna-die motherfucker out there. He's, like, literally in the last, I think, episode or maybe two episodes ago, watched someone dying on the street from an overdose and was just like, oh, those drugs are the bomb. And it's yeah, just like, it's true, they're very good, but you're gonna die. And so that's what happens. That's the episode. The very last scene of this episode I think is really, really funny, in which Bunny is driving around and Spider tries to sell his spider bags to him, not knowing he's a cop, even though he is clearly a cop. I thought that was, I think it's a great scene because he's like, man, these kids out here, it's like fucking, it's practically an open air drug market already, mm-hmm, is kind of the thing. But for me, it was the first time I realized that like Spider has branded his drugs with his name. He's selling spider bags.
And it makes you wonder, like, is he allowed to do that?
It's just good branding.
Stringer, it's great branding, but he's
Stringer
got like
approves of the entrepreneurialism. He's like, I'd like to see you out there hustling like that. That's
this guy's a real self-starter.
That's true. If I had to give this episode,
promote him to the meeting that we have at the community college where I interrupt everybody and yell at them.
Yeah, exactly. Did he buy a podium for that meeting, by the way? Was the podium just already there?
Yeah.
I think it's a funeral home. So, you know, there's probably like some.
There are podiums at funeral homes.
Yeah, they have those.
Yeah. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do because it's the law, I would give it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Yeah. I'm gonna put some thought into this. This is a tough one. But, you know, after much consideration, I think I'm going to have to give it a solid B+.
Oh, surprise, surprise. And David Roth, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, I fucking put gum in. I didn't even mean to do it.
Wow.
What would you give it?
I mean, I disagree with you guys on a lot of the particulars, but I went back and ran my metrics, which I think are more sensitive than yours, and I also landed at a B+. So I feel like...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I got to agree on that. Even, you know what? Different routes to the same, destination. I think that's fine. That's what certainly listeners like. They love this gag.
They love it. It's a good bit, and it's never going to end. It's a solid B+ episode of The Wire and a solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire. David Roth, we love you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Where can
people find you?
You can find me at defector.com. It's the website that I work at. And then I do a podcast with Drew McGarry called The Distraction. And I do a podcast about Hallmark movies with Jeb Lund called It's Christmas Town.
Nice.
And, Vince has been on both. Matt somehow has been on neither.
We're going to get Jeb on one of these times. We've been talking
about it.
You should.
I think that would be nice. Put me on, dude.
Yeah, I'm so good at podcasting. I got a soundboard. Look at that.
Incredible. I brought my own mic.
Yeah. I think I got a lot of stuff. We love having you on. Are any of those podcasts, by the way, a video podcast?
No. This is the first time that anyone's ever seen my face.
Oh, wow.
I've done some of this stuff before, but not, never done a proper video podcast. It's very exciting.
Until now.
This is the first video podcast on YouTube?
Very first one. This is probably the last one. Here's the thing. I'm very hot and I'm sitting in a chair. I usually sit in a couch and it's very nice. It is very hot in this. I'm like sitting in this is where my wife records. This is where she streams. And I don't know. I don't like sitting at a desk. It's not for me. Yeah. So follow David Roth on all of the platforms and listen to his podcast. David, thank you so much. We love you.
Thank you for having me.
Wires. The Wire. All right, everyone. Patreon.com/podcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have three names.
Let's do it.
The first is Myrtle Snowball.
That doesn't feel like a real name.
I think Myrtle is real.
Okay. I'm going to call Myrtle Frosty.
I love it. Frosty. Yeah. Second is Justin Dean.
Woo! The Dean of Mean, Justin Dean. We're gonna call this guy a nice guy.
Great, nice guy, Justin Dean. And finally, Tucker Batson.
Ooh, Tucker. Yeah. T-Bats, that's like right there, but that feels a little.
Call him Fucker Matt, son.
Yeah, no, we're gonna call him T-Bone.
All right, T-Bone's good.
Yeah.
T-Bone. All right, that is your shout outs for this week. We have a bunch more, but you know, we gotta wrap this up. I got a baby. I got my wife texting me. It's really hot in here, and we're on video. So. Patreon.
Can I just tell you what ChatGPT suggested for Justin Dean?
Feel free, dude.
In the spirit of providing a nickname in the style of The Wire, a possible nickname for Justin Dean could be JD or The Dean, playing off his last name. It is important to note, however, that The Wire is a fictional TV show that depicts a harsh reality of drug culture and its associated violence, and it is not necessarily appropriate or respectful to use nicknames associated with that culture in real life.
Well, I'm sorry. Are you being shamed?
You're not my fucking dad, ChatGPT.
Yeah, you're getting lectured by a robot.
You're getting lectured by a robot, like, literally. First of all, I didn't know ChatGPT was a fucking lib.
Get him. Drag
God
fucking,
is
it. I heard a lot of concerns about woke AI, though. I think.
I know. Yeah, apparently he's too woke. Now,
turns out they were justified.
Why AI too woke these days? I'm tired. Patreon.com/broadcast for all of the bonus episodes where we talk about other things. Broadcast@gmail.com for your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening and watching. And next time, and until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
David Simon, come on the show. Lying in a vacant Jimmy spot. The Barksdale crew caught up in wires. Daniels runs his MCU. Herc and Carver are back on the grind. Fooled by corner kids. Time after Stringer. Channel, what will look like? String almost kills him on sight.
Would you look? We are back talking season 3. Wire after wire. Close the book on the docs. Back to drug violence. Crime after crime. Did you know David Roth taught Matt Lieb to sing? Rhyme after rhyme. Season 3, episode 1 of The Wire. Time after time. Yeah, bitch. Sucking on dick. Eating nuts. Fucking butts. Putting it in my mouth. Drink the cum. I love it. I gotta write more lyrics.
Oh! Here is a second verse of this song for me to play. But I am so tired from raising my little baby. Vince Mancini is a Dago wop.
He munja the spaghetti and sauce.
Would you look? We are back talking season 3. Wire after wire. Vincent likes to eat cum, mine specifically. Lum after lum. Gotta work on lyrics for next week's podcast. Line after line. Sucky fuck, eat the butt. Why am I still singing? Time after time. Time after time.
Wait, what? I don't think I know all the lyrics.
Would you suck on my dick and then eat my shit? Sucky, eat my butt. I am going off the top of my dome right now. And there's a thing in the butt I can take. Fucky, fucky, my fuck.
Put your dick in my dick, and our dicks will be in double dicks. Time after time, wire after wire, wire after wire, wire after wire.
I assume we're ending now. Yeah, that's what I thought. It feels like we're... All right, I'm just going to look at them. Oh, it's like four more. Suck a dick. Too many things, man. Too many things to do. Why is this a video podcast now? It's going to take so much more time. But you know what? Maybe people will like it. All right.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.